May I proceed, Your Honors? Good morning, Your Honors, and to the rest of the court, good morning. I am Attorney Brunel Donald Che. I am the attorney for the appellant, Mr. Eugene Mullins. Your Honors, in our preamble to our Constitution, it states, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, ensure justice. When we say our Pledge of Allegiance at the end of it, what do we say? We say, and justice for all. In this case, Eugene Mullins went to trial looking for justice in his case, and that was denied him in the lower court.
Now, forgive me, but let me just ask you this.
Yes, ma'am.
Couldn't the jury infer Mr. Mullins' intent to defraud from his active participation in the drafting of the proposals, and especially the payment invoices, because he seems to have known that the work was not done?
Your Honor, given that Cook County determined that these contracts were an immediate and urgent need, Eugene Mullins, there was no rule in the county that said that these vendors or that first-time vendors could not receive help from Cook County employees. Chief of Staff Karen Crawford testified that actually that it was encouraged for first-time vendors to get help on their invoices and proposals. And with respect to the invoices themselves, where they say Kenny Demas and Michael Peary and Cliff Borner didn't do their invoices, they had no independent evidence. They took their word for it. That's what the FBI agent said. He took their word for it. In this case, each one of the vendors testified that they had no intent to defraud when they asked questions, when they got their questions answered, when they got templates, whenever they were given direction. They did not believe that they were involved in any intent to defraud. This is in the government's case. This is what they testified to.
But later, did he not ask them for a share of the contract proceeds to pay for subcontractors, and it would seem that no one ever saw or met them. So a jury might infer that his requests were, you know, a thinly disguised request for a kickback.
Your Honor, in this case, the statute requires that there be, at the time that these contracts are being contemplated, at the time that this contract was awarded to these vendors, that Eugene Mullins, in exchange for money, would be influenced to get them a contract. Each one of these vendors testified that did not happen here. When I got my contract, he did not ask me for money. That is directly in the transcript. Not only that, with respect to this bribe money, there was no money found in this case whatsoever. No money trailed to Eugene Mullins whatsoever. Again, the FBI agent...
But these people changed their stories.
They did after they were arrested, yeah. Your Honor. Actually, Clifford Borner told the government, the FBI agents, three times, I didn't give them money. I did my work. I hired Phil, Dante, Pookie, Shaniqua, and everybody else to do this work. It was after they were arrested and thrown in a holding cell that they said, you know what, okay, I did give some money. Kenny Demas testified on the transcript, page 487, that it was after he told them what they wanted to hear that he was released. Those were Kenny Demas's exact words.
Your position is, and I'm sure you argued vigorously at the trial court, given how you're arguing here,
yes,
vigorously,
ma'am,
that the jury, when... You know, that all of these people, Borner, Demos, Peary, Renders, but Mullins didn't testify, but there was some other evidence concerning Mullins, that all of them flipped and lied. The problem is the jury believed what they said, and the jury heard, because I know you had to cross them on the
yes.
fact that they didn't admit any of this before they were arrested, right?
Yes,
so the
right.
jury heard that. I know you were very vigorous in cross-examining them. The jury heard it and didn't buy it. That's what, and that's your burden here on sufficiency of the evidence. You know, what are we to do with a transcript where they all admitted it and the jury found it. You know, if you had just one person who said it, maybe you'd be in a better position. But that's like four witnesses who all said the same thing.
Your Honor, and I understand that. And that was what my argument was in a lower court, that just because 50 people get on the stand and tell the same lie doesn't make it the truth. And in this situation...
But what I'm saying to you is the jury didn't buy that. You made that argument. They didn't buy it. And you talked about the Constitution, how important it is and everything. But we also have to honor the jury's verdict. That's something we're bound to do, unless it's totally out of whack. And here, you're not giving us a reason to see that it's, you know, well, I'm just using everyday parlance, totally
out of whack. I will tell you this,
totally,
Your Honor, that the jury was sent back there with an indictment that they used to determine what their verdict would be. In the indictment, it first said that you only need a purchasing agent and Eugene Mullins to get these contracts through. Trial said you need a deputy chief of staff, a comptroller, a purchasing agent, and a department head. Eugene Mullins was not the department head on these contracts. His signature was not needed. His initials were not required. His secretary didn't walk any of this through. When Annette Goldsmith got on the stand, his secretary, and said, these are his initials, the government knew in advance that those were not Eugene Mullins' initials on payment documents, because he was not the requesting requesting person for these contracts. So the jury even went back with that. Not only that, the indictment said that it was Eugene Mullins that determined that these amounts would be under $25,000. What did the chief financial officer, J. Morgan Williams, say? She said Cook County set these budgets. Cook County wanted these contracts. Not only that, with Gary Render's paperwork alone, just go there. On February 24th, he got a justification letter. On February 25th, his invoice was put in. On February 26th, he got a check. Clearly, $25,000 worth of work had not been done. This was not some scheme to defraud. It wasn't like Eugene Mullins woke up one morning and said, hey, I'm going to scam the county.
Well, after this, he picked up the check. Then, I don't know, a few days later, he gave Mullins $9,000 in cash.
Your Honors, in this case, the FBI agent said he went on their word. There was no independent corroborative evidence that he ever took a dime. Not a receipt, not a bucket of chicken, not a piece of toothpaste, not a trip, not a vacation. Absolutely zero corroboration that he took money. Again, Michael Peary, Clifford Warner, and Kenny Demas all testified, had told FBI agents, I helped my sister out, I bought a TV, I gave money to Trinity Church of Christ, I bought a truck, I bought things, I paid my workers. With respect to Michael Peary wouldn't have even needed a subcontractor to pay any bribe, because his wife, LaFron Peary, was his subcontractor. She went to work for him. Now, also, they kept telling the jury, they didn't do the work. Well, here we know that Gary Render and LaFron Peary worked, because the fifth witnesses testified Monday through Friday from April to September 2010. They worked every single day. They were hard workers. They were dedicated.
What about Demos? Was there any testimony?
With respect to Demos, he testified out of his own mouth that he went door to door, he gave flyers, that he attended meetings. With respect to Clifford Warner, he told the grand jury, I did above and beyond the work, and I should have been paid more.
So with these various things they did, was there any evidence presented by the defense that these various people didn't exist? Or that they existed, rather? You know, that this work that was to perform, I assume,
yes.
You know, you knew you got notice of what work was alleged that hadn't been performed. So you got addresses or you got names or whatever. You had subpoena power. Those people could have testified.
What happened, Your Honor, is Jeffrey Tondola came and testified for the defense. Danny Marble came and testified for the defense that they saw them working Monday through Friday, 9 to 6 from April to September 2010. As a matter of fact, Your Honor,
we had a jury.
Yes, I understand, Your Honors, that we did have a jury. But again, I'm going back to the indictment. They went according to the indictment. This is what was sent back with them. They were told that he only needed a purchasing agent. We know that's not true, because you needed at least 5 to 6 signatures to push it through, and Eugene Mullins' signature was not here. They were told that he put the budget under $25,000, Eugene Mullins. But the chief financial officer said, no, Cook County set these. They are saying that this was a scheme to defraud, that he decided to defraud Cook County. But what did the chief financial officer, J. Morgan Williams, say? She said, no, these were urgent. We needed them. They were the second string contractors. They weren't even the first contractors we contemplated. And we were on deadline. We needed to meet these deadlines. So Eugene Mullins was asked to do recommendations. Why? Because the four people who were supposed to be doing this work, their departments, didn't do the work. The government...
Okay.
Forgive
me. Thank you, Ms. Donnelly, but your time has expired.
Thank you.
Ms. Jenkins?
May it please the court, Lindsay Jenkins on behalf of the United States. Eugene Mullins was charged in a fraud scheme. Which he used his official position at Cook County to steer a series of contracts to several of his acquaintances, four of whom were his co-defendants. The evidence at trial established that the defendant caused to be submitted documents that contained false and materially misrepresented the work that was done by the co-defendants, such that Cook County paid these individuals, and then the defendant solicited a portion of those proceeds from those co-defendants.
Is it your view that the vendors understood from the start that they were not really going to be doing the work that was set forth in the proposals, or rather, is it that they would be paid regardless and there would be no follow-through to make sure that they did?
I believe that each of the vendors, and there are four of them, testified at trial that they understood that they would get further instruction and directive from the defendant after they received payment about what it was that they were supposed to do, where they were supposed to go, which meetings they were supposed to attend, in the case of the census contracts, which areas they may be requested to canvass.
And I was wondering about this. In terms of the alleged bribery, as I understand it, Mr. Mullins never expressly asked for a kickback, but he told the vendors that he needed a portion of the payments for purpose of paying subcontractors who, it turns out, didn't exist. I gather that Render and Purry were at least suspicious about these subcontractors, but does it matter or not that the vendor believed there was a subcontractor, or rather thought, wait a minute, this is a kickback?
Two things. First, for the reasons the government states in its brief, our position is that any challenge as to the sufficiency of evidence as to the bribery convictions is waived. No motion, Rule 29 motion was made with respect to those counts. But in answer to the court's question, it really doesn't much matter whether or not the vendors actually believed that there was a subcontractor who would be out there doing the work. None of those co-defendant vendors were actually charged with violations of 666. It's the defendant, Mr. Mullins, who was charged with soliciting and then accepting a reward. And the subcontractor was a cover story. It was an atmospheric explanation given to each of the vendors as to why portions of the proceeds had to be given back to the defendant in cash, without ever, introducing the supposed subcontractors to each of the co-defendants.
Now, Goldsmith, who worked for him, testified about the whole $25,000 business for 25 to 30 of these service contracts, all the same, the nature of them being pretty much the same. They're polling or doing various things out in the community.
Correct.
And so what about this point that counsel made that he wasn't the one that set the $25,000?
And the government's evidence at trial was not that the defendant specifically set that deadline, or excuse me, that threshold that was a county regulation that if a contract were under $25,000, just did not require board approval. The evidence that the government offered at trial through each of the vendors is conversations that each of the vendors had with the defendant, in which the defendant said, the amount that you should propose should be under $25,000. There'll be less red tape, there's less review that must be done on Cook County side in order to get these contracts approved.
Well, what about what Williams said? She made reference to what Williams said.
To what? Goldsmith, to the secretary?
No, counsel argued that Jay Williams made some comment about this $25,000 threshold, that $25,000 wasn't a threshold. But you're saying that the county regulations covered that.
Correct. And there was evidence at trial from various witnesses in the government's case and even in the defendant's case that if the contract were over $25,000, it would require an extra layer of approval. I do believe that J. Morgan Williams did testify, if my memory serves, that there... Well, I do not believe that J. Morgan Williams testified that contracts under $25,000 did not require, you know, was inconsistent with the government's evidence that contracts under that threshold amount would not require extra levels of approval. Perhaps I'm not answering your question, but maybe
no, I... What are we to make about the...
Were you done?
No, just I wanted to ask about her other point that it was never tied down. This cash that was given, alleged cash given back to Mullins, nobody traced that money anywhere, showed that it actually went in his hands.
That is correct. The government did not offer evidence at trial concerning actual use of the funds. The jury did hear two matters, however. When the defendant did take the stand, and he did take the stand, he was asked questions about the fact that he filed for bankruptcy about a year later. And the government also argued in closing that it's reasonable to conclude that because the defendant was provided with cash, that would be extremely hard, of course, to trace. Now, doesn't mean you couldn't trace, you know, use of cash, but that because the defendant was paid by each of his co-defendants in cash, that there wouldn't be records, for example, of the kinds of purchases that you might otherwise see had he been paid in a way that was traceable or more easily traceable.
What are we to make about the dispute about whether the initials that Ms. Goldsmith identified were really Mr. Mullins' initials or someone else's?
Your Honor, the government's position, as we stated in our brief, is that that is a determination for the jury to make. Ms. Goldsmith testified without objection that she had worked for the defendant for a long period of time, that she had come to recognize his signature and his initials. She testified in front of the jury to make a credibility determination about the veracity of her testimony, and she testified that she recognized his initials. She was crossed about that at length at the trial, and it's ultimately for the jury to decide whether they believed that that testimony or not. In the end, the actual initials on the documents really are not critical. They're certainly an important fact, but they're not critical to the overall evidence offered by the government, which is that the defendant had a hand in every step of causing the submission and payment to his co-defendants. Certainly the initials were just one of many facts from which the jury reasonably concluded that the defendant did participate in a scheme to defraud.
Ms. Donald-Kai has pointed out that Ms. Crawford testified that the county could pay invoices for work that had not yet been performed. So I appreciate your addressing that point and how it relates to the government's theory that the invoices at issue here were fraudulent.
If I can respond, I believe that Ms. Crawford, when you read her testimony in its entirety, testifies about how when she worked in the Department of Capital Planning, which involved presumably multi-million-dollar contracts and construction projects, that frequently that would be a case where the county would actually pay for that work in part in advance. But to be very clear, on page 817 of the transcript, Karen Crawford was asked about immediate payment, and she responded, quote, it was not my experience except for maybe once or twice where I would get payment ahead of service. That's the transcript at page 817 and 818. Again, on cross-examination, she was asked at page 826 of her transcript, when she was asked about advance payment, she said, typically we paid for work once it was done. That's consistent with the evidence that the government offered at the very beginning from Tim Kinsella, who was with the County Comptroller's Office, who testified very clearly that the county does not pay for work in advance. Karen Cropper's testimony was not inconsistent with that. Her statement and testimony was that in special circumstances, there may be advance payment, but that as a general matter, she says on those page sites that I mentioned, that typically work is paid for once it was done.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Jenkins. Thank you. So, Ms. Donnelly, you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your counsel.
And thank you so much for obliging me, sir and madams. With respect to vendors all testified, they all testified at trial that they intended to do the work. That was what they said. With respect to the indictment says, in furtherance of the scheme, Eugene Mullins lowered these amounts under $25,000 to avoid board approval. CFO J. Morgan Williams said, this was no scheme. We, Cook County, lowered these amounts, not Eugene Mullins. Annette Goldsmith's testimony about Eugene's initials were critical, and they used that in their closing because that would lead the jury to believe that if his initials are on payment documents, that he had the power to get checks cut. As I said, even Annette Goldsmith testified she didn't take these documents around. Nobody supporting it to Eugene took them around. The comptroller's employee, Faisal Abbasi, took these around to get the signatures. That's how you know that his signatures were needed. This was not his department. Not only that, Karen Crawford said that people could be paid up front. There was no rule about it, and this was a special case because the deadlines were approaching and they were behind and no work was being done. That's why these vendors were paid up front. With respect to the CFO, she said it was urgent. That's why we needed these vendors. Eugene Mullins was the spokesperson for Todd Stroger. His job was to say, hi, Todd Stroger's a rock star. Why is the spokesperson doing recommendations? Because the people who were on this, Mr. Ramos, Carla Oglesby, Al Pritchett, and others who were supposed to have gotten this work done didn't get it done. That's the only reason why Eugene Mullins is even here. He didn't conjure up, let me do some contracts, let me do some fraud. He was asked for recommendations. He gave them. And the witnesses that testified that these vendors worked above and beyond the $25,000 in this case. There was no fraud here. There was no scheme here. The government knew that through the 302s that they gave to us, that there was no scheme and no fraud. Thank you so much. And God bless you all.